Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide to take you deeper in your parenting. The date today is December the 12th, 2014. Our topic for today is, you've chosen wisely. That's right, we're playing a little off the Indiana Jones. What was that? That was Raiders of the Lost Ark?
No, The Last Crusade.
The Last Crusade. Why did I get that wrong? One of my favorites. So we're going to talk a little bit today about how do we help kids be smart whenever they choose. The idea and the concept of logical thought seems to be something that is so very simple for us whenever it comes to being adults. But the reality is there is a very unique specialness in learning to think logically and make good choices and decisions, especially if you start to take a look at the brain and neurology and some of the chemistry that Jeff and I are going to talk about today. Stay tuned for that. We're going to get into that here in just a little bit. Before we do, let's do some quick housekeeping. That's the kind of day it is, Jeff. Some quick housekeeping before we get started. If you guys want to get notified of any of the new episodes that come out here at the Real Family Guys podcast, hey, simple and easy way that you can do that. Go over to thefamilypodcast.com. There's going to be a contact us button in there. That's the one thing, if you guys haven't seen it, Family Podcast Network has relaunched with a completely new version of the website. Now, we are still ironing out. It does look good. We're still ironing out bugs. One of the things that a lot of the supporting members of the Family Podcast member have come on, and we've kind of sought them out, they said, hey, listen, you need to put contact us buttons on there because we can't figure it out. So there's going to be more contact stuff that's going to start popping up here as we go. Stay tuned for that. Be patient with me as we get that knocked out. So, real quick, there are some manual ways that you can do that. You can always email us, Trey Gibson at the Family Podcast Network or Jeff at TexasFamilyInstitute.org. Feel free to email us. We love getting emails from you guys. Man, several of you guys really utilize that and talk with us and visit with us, and we love that. Keep sending those our way. If you're thinking, man, should I? Would it be okay? Yes, man, come on. Shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you, hear your question, even if you don't want it on the show. Jeff and I love talking to you guys. You can also call us, 661-PARENT-0. That's right. If you're out about, you're driving around, let's just say you're at your phone, you're not at a computer, and you're like, man, I want to ask Trey and Jeff this question, have them talk about this next week. We want that so bad. Shoot that over to us. Give us a call, 661-PARENT and the number 0. You won't go live onto a show where, hey, you're on the phone with Jeff and Trey. Don't worry about that. You think about your question. Give us a call. You can leave it right on the voicemail, and then we'll see about throwing it up on the show. Don't forget to ask your question first. Give us your details at the end after you've asked the question first. And last but not least, let's see, what else do we have? We got those two out of the way. Well, we'll leave the contact. Normally, we have some other contact stuff that we would throw out there to you guys. We don't have it right now because of the new site. If you haven't seen the new Family Podcast Network site, check that out, because one of the new things that's going to be coming out here at the Real Family Guys podcast is, guess what? Jeff and I have got our own brand new logo. We've been talking for months and months about getting a Real Family Guys podcast exclusive logo that's just for us. It's no longer, you know, the Family Podcast Network logo, and it looks like it's probably going to be done tomorrow. Jeff and I are going to have to review it and make sure we like it, but we hired just a fantastic graphic artist, and all the stuff that she knocked out, Jeff and I both liked. So stay tuned for that. We're going to have some cool stuff. We haven't seen it yet, so we don't know, and I'm excited. Are you excited about it, Jeff?
I am. You know, you gave me the preliminary stuff, and we kind of shot that off to the developer with some basic ideas of what we wanted it to look like, and I'm just excited to see what the end result's going to look like. I know it's going to be great.
I'm pretty psyched up about that. All right, with all of that out of the way today, Jeffrey, what are we talking about, man?
Well, you know, I spend all of my time basically goofing around on the internet. No, that's not true. But I do spend a lot of time in front of the computer, and I love looking around for what's trending out there when it comes to parenting stuff. And honestly, I went looking for this topic tonight because in my private practice, I've recently had just a number of families that have come to see me, and it feels like I've kind of hit like a topic that seems to come up again and again with kids of different ages and parents of different life stages. And one thing that I've noticed is that there seems to be this thought in parenting that we're at odds with our kids. You know, I've got parents coming in just saying, man, I don't know what's going on. My kid's doing this, doing that. And I try to discipline them. I try to punish them. I try to, however they say it. But You know, basically it comes down to, as the parents are describing this to me, they're basically telling their kid what to do all the time. And when they get pushback from their kid, they double down. And then they, you know, well, now I'm grounding my kid. Well, now if they won't listen to me, I'm like, well, I'm not going to put up with this. You're going to, and I'm just like, wow, well, no wonder the kid's pushing back with you, right?
Yeah.
I said, I would love to be able to just kind of dialogue and find a good way of talking about, how do we change our parenting so it becomes easier and less work for us? I mean, because honestly, being in control of your kid 24/7 is exhausting, you know?
Yeah.
And so being able to help parents transition from this idea that their kids need to be controlled rather than guided, right? And that's what I want to talk about tonight is how can we as parents help teach our kids or help create this culture where we're giving our kid the power to choose and we're helping them to make those good decisions. So gradually they're going to shift from being, you know, Jeff controlled or dad controlled or mom controlled to being self controlled. Because when they're self controlled, it means I have to work. I don't have to work as hard as a parent. And honestly, it's more enjoyable to be a kid and to be in a family because I get to spend time telling my kid how awesome they are and how proud I am of the choices they make rather than, you know, directing them and making them do everything that I think they need to be doing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And the problem with it is that when kids first come out, they're still learning a lot about life. And so there's an element that we have to be a part of them in that way. And it's not necessarily about control, but it's about helping them be successful in their lives. Because if kids are coming in and they're running around screaming and breaking stuff and doing all these, you know, making a lot of bad decisions all stacked up in a row, I mean, they're going to create for themselves relationships that are either toxic or nobody's going to want to be around them. And so there's an element that we have to protect certain things because little kids do love to run around, like little itty-bitty, you know, two-year-olds and stuff like that. They love to run around, and they love to get into things or break things. And we can't let them, you know, take advantage of other people's rights to, you know, personal property that doesn't get destroyed. So in some ways, we have to guide and in essence, control a little bit when they're young. What happens is it seems as though we kind of stick to it, and we don't want to give it up. As they get older, we begin to continue to, quote-unquote, control them, which in reality is an illusion. We don't really even control them when they're little. We influence them for one form of fashion or another, whether it's through fear, I hope not, but whether we do it through fear, and yes, I am guilty of doing that myself, or through influence because we've built good relationship or whatever in between, you know, we influence them when we make those decisions, but we forget that as our kids get older, that the entire purpose of parenting is to not get them to do the right thing, is to get them to want to do the right thing. One thing that you said, before you were even doing the Real Family Guys podcast with me, it was when you came on as a special guest, you said something that was so deeply insightful. And you made a comment that, I want my kids to grow up not saying, I don't want to do this because my dad's going to kill me, versus, I don't want to do this because it would kill my dad. Right? You see the difference in between those. And I thought that's so insightful. That's something I've carried with me throughout the years of us doing this. And I think that's what we're talking about today. How do we get our kids to think, to make good decisions, to do those things, most importantly, and here it is, Jeff, even when we're not looking?
Oh, yeah, when we're not around. And honestly, that is, I think, is the goal, the successful goal of parenting.
Yes, agreed.
Is that our kids develop the ability to make good and healthy choices so that we don't have to monitor them. They don't do it because they're looking for our praise or our approval. They're doing it because they believe it's the right thing to do. Like you said, they want to do those
things.
That's
right. That's right.
Right. And honestly, it takes the battle and the chore out of parenting. And that's what brought it out to me is as I'm hearing these parents talk about their relationship with their kids, they're couching all of their interactions in this phrase that sounds like they're enemy combatants. You know, it's like, well, I fight with my kid, or, well, you know, we did this and we were arguing and I wasn't going to let him win, or, you know, I have to pick my battles. Have you heard parents use those phrases?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll be honest. We've made those comments before.
Well, and there's some truth to it. I mean, there's some give and take, and there's certainly authority in being in charge of things and setting boundaries and limits and stuff. But by and large, I think that mindset that instead of we're on opposite sides of the battlefield, I love to help parents come to the conclusion of instead of being on the opposite side of a conflict, we're on the same ship headed the same direction. We just have different roles.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, no, I think you're right too. We frame so much of the let's go start this differently. We frame a lot of the negative interactions with our kids, like you said, as warfare. And I think we in a lot of ways we establish the end result before we've even started. Because we've walked into this with that combatant mindset instead of And again, if, you know, Jeff and I always, almost always come back to this Arbinger stuff, right? What's the mentality that's happening when we walk into it in a warfare? I'm concerned with one thing. Winning. Me. I want to win, right? Whose goals and objectives am I focused on? And when
but
we can
actuality,
really...
who wins a war?
Nobody. Everybody. Nobody. Everybody loses.
Everybody
yeah.
loses.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a good point.
It's destructive.
And so whenever we can move ourselves out of a combative mindset, it allows us to do something different, which is we stop being focused on my goals and I start becoming being able to see your goals. And so while I may not let you eat the entire pack of Oreos like you want and you're upset with, instead of turning it into a battle of yes versus no, you're not going to eat all of those. Well, yes, I am. And we can turn it into seeing how can I see what your desires are and how can we help you meet those. No, you can't eat a whole pack, baby, because that's expensive. It's bad for your body. Everybody else may want to enjoy those as well. But here's what we can do. What do you think? Right. You know,
yeah,
big difference.
Or even ask them, how many cookies do you think a person needs to eat to have a good dessert?
Yeah, that's good.
Right. Well, do you need 15? Whew, man, that's a lot
can
of cookies.
Can I have 10 cookies?
And the thing about it is, we don't just tell our children to make choices and then let them make poor choices. We guide them and help them because I ran across this article that we're going to talk about tonight about helping our kids make choices. But there are other articles out there. Even I ran across one that's over at crosswalk.com. There was a blog that was written by a guy named John Upchurch, who's one of the senior editors. He says, "Why I give my children fewer or no choices," right? And he goes through and he talks about at different stages of development, kids are more and less capable of making certain choices. And so, you know, we have to be discerning in the types of choices we're giving our kids. We don't take them into Walmart and say, you know, pick any cereal because they're going to pick the ones that are unhealthy for them but taste really good. But we can give them some parameters and say, all right, you can pick anything that has oats in it, right? Or you know, we limit their choices and let them make healthy choices within a certain parameters. The same thing, you know, you're going to run into frustration if the choices that we want to give our kids is in the morning I'm trying to get out the door and I say, okay, you get to pick out your clothes today. And, well, you know, the next thing that you know, they're spending 40 minutes picking out their clothes because you said I could choose. And you're like, oh, you know. There are ways to do the whole choosing thing that are going to drive you to frustration. But if we help our children to make wise choices and we teach them discernment and give them framework and structure in how to make those choices – then we can still promote the decision-making process for them. For instance, when my kids are really young, I might tell them something like, when it's bath time, okay, you know, it's bath time. Do you want to take your bath in right now or in 5 minutes? Well, that's still giving them a choice.
Yeah.
But they're still going to take a bath. You know what I mean?
I remember years ago working with a mom whenever we worked at New Horizons. And I remember one of the things that she said was, she goes, I can't ever get him to brush his teeth at night. And I said, well, why don't you just, it's just so simple. I said, why don't you just give him a choice of whether he can do it right then or in 5 minutes? And she goes, that'll work? And I said, I don't know. It could totally backfire with him. I've seen it work. I've seen it not work. But I mean, the only thing, if you keep doing it the same way you've been doing it, you're going to keep getting the same results you've been getting. So she goes, okay. Next week I came back, she treated me like I was some kind of therapy god. And I'm just like, I read this in a book. That's all I did. I just repeated the information to you. But she loved it because once she gave him those choices, she goes, Trey, then I started expanding it to everything we had a problem with. Getting his clothes on. Do you want to put this pair of pants on? Or do you want to put this pair of pants on? And then all of a sudden it went from, no, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to get dressed to those pair. And then he was dressed. He did it all himself. It's amazing how it works. But I think we were built to have choices. You know, this is moving into slightly spiritual beliefs, but I think it has a context in parenting as well. I think we were designed, and Jeff and I have never hidden our belief systems. I believe we were designed to be sovereign beings that make our own choices and choose, so that way we have the option to authentically choose to do the right moral, spiritual, whatever you want to say thing, right? And so I think whenever we do these things with our kids, we're appealing to something that's on a foundational creative, a creation level of what we were designed to be.
So the articles that we're going to look at tonight, let me just go ahead and kind of transition to those. One of them that I found was from the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, talking about parenting stuff under the emotional health section. And it's a list of things that parents can do to help their teen make responsible choices. And I was reading through it, and it's absolutely spot on. I loved what it said, and I had a lot of good information. But as we're reading through this, I couldn't help but think, man, if you wait till your kid's a teen before you start you start doing this stuff, you're going to be behind the curve. And so I'd really like, as we're talking through this, for us to kind of look at when we can start helping our kids to be able to make healthy decisions, right? So it goes through, and it starts off by giving us some quick facts about teens. And this is something that often happens in the therapy room as well. Parents come in and it's like they've forgotten how things were when they were teens, or they remember how defiant they were, and they're afraid that their kids are going to be as bad as they were. So they're like, I don't want it to happen with my kids, so I'm trying to shut it down now. And I'm like, no, don't try to shut it down. It's normal. It is normal for teens to challenge their values, the parents' values and beliefs. They're kind of spreading their wings. Developmentally, this is one of the tasks of adolescence, is for them to become their own person. For the beginning formative years, their identity is really bound up in their family, you know? So I was not a Jeff Emery. I was just an Emery, and I did what Emerys did, and this is Emery family. But when I moved up into my adolescent preteen years, I started to wonder, well, who is not just who am I as an Emery, but who is Jeff Emery? And I started wearing different clothes and hanging out with my friends, and so my choices and my values were a little bit more influenced by my friends and their approval. Still heavily relied on my family, but it's normal for me to, not just for me, but for teens and adolescents to start kind of challenging, well, why do we do it this way? And, well, I don't want to do that. I want to do something else. And what they need from us at this stage is not control. What they need from us is support and guidance, so that we can demonstrate to them that they can make good choices, right? And so what ends up happening is, as parents, like Trey was saying earlier, we start off doing everything for our kids, and if we don't transition at some point to doing less for our kids and letting them do for themselves, we end up just coming across as controlling parents. We never transition from taking care of our kid to preparing our kids for life. And the more controlling we are as parents, the more rebellious our teens are likely to become, because it's normal for them to be autonomous and to do things for themselves.
I tell you, Jeff, there was a quote that I heard earlier today, and I want to find it for you because it was so good. It was a quote by a guy named John Vanier, I believe is how you say his name. He said, "To love someone is not, first of all, to do things for them, but to reveal to them their beauty and value. To say to them, through our attitude, you are beautiful, you are important, I trust you, you can trust yourself. We all know well that we can do things for others, and in the process crush them, making them feel as though they are incapable of doing things by themselves. To love someone is to reveal to them their capacities for life, the life that is shining in them."
Wow.
I mean, what an amazing, the summary in all of this, that our main goal, I mean, you could substitute everything they talked about in terms of love with parenting in that. What is our job as a parent? It's to tell them they're beautiful, you're important, and I trust you. And you can trust yourself. Now go do things, and being a part of that. And this is what this encapsulates everything we're talking about with choices today. Because if we do things for them, if we provide things for them in all cases, we crush them. Because fundamentally, what are we conveying? You couldn't make it without us. This is what we're talking about today. That's right. That's right. This is everything. Isn't that an amazing quote?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I see it in other relationships as well. I mean, a lot of times we make decisions for other people because we don't want to upset them, right? We don't want them to feel bad. We don't want to hurt their feelings. And so we rob them of the ability to make the choice for themselves. And in essence, we're saying, you're not capable of making this choice, right? So, that's probably a different discussion for a different day. But we do it on an emotional level as well. So, all right. So let's go ahead and get into this Palo Alto Medical Foundation article. The tips that they have for parents: whenever your kid comes to you to talk about some decision that they're currently facing, that is a golden opportunity. And so they give us some tips. And the first thing that they do is I think a really wise thing, is they recommend that we slow down and we listen to them. That we take the time to make sure that we understand what they're asking. And because part of the problem as parents, we think that we communicate really well all the time because we're talking and listening all day long. But the truth is, we often make the assumption that we really understand what's going on. And so our listening is more listening to respond rather than listening to understand. And when our kids come to us, they're basically giving us that like I said, golden opportunity to try to connect with us. But at the same time, we want to be able to, with how we respond, we want to be able to tell our kids, hey, thanks. I appreciate you coming to me, but I'm not going to make your decision for you. I will help you and guide you, but I trust you to make that decision. That's what slowing down and listening to them is doing behaviorally, is it's telling them that if we don't come in and say, well, all you have to do is this, or if you would just, you know, it will slow down and take the time to understand them and give them guidance and feedback without saying, well, here's what you ought to do. Then we're communicating to them, wow, you can handle this. You know, you got this. I'm here to help you. And if you have a question, I'll give you some support. But you can make this decision. Let's talk about it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So the tips they give us specifically, you know, slow down and allow your kid to describe the problem or the situation in their own words, right? And some of that listening to understand means that we're asking them beyond what's actually happening. How do you feel about that, right? My therapist. How does that make you feel? But yeah, I mean, there's always emotions that are connected to what's going on, and they're important because they inform how we understand things and how we feel like responding. So, you know, slow down and ask them, how do you feel about that? How does it make you feel? If you're asking clarifying or follow-up questions, try your best to avoid those close-ended questions, the ones that can be answered with a yes or no or a one-word answer.
Uh-huh.
We want to ask them questions that are open-ended, that begin with how or why or what. How does that make you feel? Or why is that important? Or what could you have done differently? Or what else was going on? You know, and that kind of draws them out and allows them not only to give more information, but also as a signal that you're listening to them and that you want more information and that you're willing to hear what they have to say, right? Now here's the kicker. Step three in letting your kid talk about the problem in their own words. This is the hardest one, honestly. Is you have to really listen to what they're saying instead of thinking about how you're going to respond.
Yeah. See, I'm horrible about that.
Oh man, I think we all are. I use the example sometimes when I'm talking about this whole communication stuff, and I'll say, have you ever had a conversation with a person where you can tell that they were just listening long enough and waiting for you to take a breath so they could jump in?
So frustrating.
Yeah. So the example I give is like, let's say that you went to Disneyland or something, right? And you come back and one of your coworkers says something like, well, hey, how was your trip? Right. Well, man, that's a golden opportunity for me to say how my trip was. And so I start telling him about the things that I like to do. And as soon as I take a breath, he's like, hey, did you ride the teacup ride? It's really silly, but that was like the most amazing ride. He wasn't listening to what I was saying. He was just wanting to tell me about his experience.
Yeah,
right?
He was priming. Yep.
Yeah. And when we do that with our kids, especially when we do it on a regular basis of just waiting to jump in there and tell them what we think, we're basically conveying with our behavior that over-talking kind of behavior of saying, eh, what you think and have to say really doesn't matter. Let's jump right to what I think, right? So, that's the step one is to listen, right? There's an old saying, God gave us two ears and one mouth. You know why?
Uh-huh. I want you to listen twice as much.
That's it. So we can listen twice as much as we talk. And really, that's where it starts with trying to connect with our kids is taking the time to listen. Honestly, that's the foundation for having good communication. When our kids feel like we're listening, they feel important. So,
well, you know, there's been tons of research that they've released on how people learn. And what they found is that people are significantly less likely to learn whenever you just feed them information that you've discovered. What allows a person to actually retain information, in other words, where does someone really learn their lesson, as we say proverbially, right? Somebody learns their lesson best from coming to their belief systems and core beliefs themselves, allowing them to say, okay, these things happen. These are the choices that I made. Here was my outcome. Maybe that wasn't the best choice to make, right? Mm-hmm. When we allow kids to reach their own goals, they process a lot better. How do we help kids process? It's what Jeff just talked about, is just shut up and listen. It's amazing. Kids can be convinced of the wrong thing. And sometimes when you just sit down and you don't try to persuade them, you don't try to dissuade them. You don't try to lure them. You don't try to bait them. Sometimes when you just listen, kids will go through that and go, oh, Lord mercy, that did not work. and then they'll go back and revise statements. If we can just learn to hush, that doesn't always work. Sometimes you do need to ask questions. However, it's not leading questions. It's just getting them to think a little bit deeper.
Right. And it really takes slowing down and listening to lay the groundwork and create that opportunity for them to hear what they're saying. And sometimes my questions aren't even questions. There's just kind of a reflection, with at the end of my sentence, there's that raised voice that turns into a question, I pick up my daughter from school and she's like, "Oh, my chemistry teacher is the worst." And my reflection is just, "Sounds like you had a rough day." Sounds like you had a rough day, something in chemistry. So once we've listened to them, the blog post that we're looking at today from Palo Alto Medical Foundation suggests as parents, here's something else you can do. Once you've given them the opportunity to explain the situation and you explored it a little bit by listening to them and asking, follow-up questions and paraphrasing with them, next thing you need to do is point out that there are choices here. Some of it is reviewing the choices that were already made in that situation, but sometimes our kids don't see that they have a choice, right? As a matter of fact, a lot of times I've heard people say, "I didn't have any choice," and that always makes me cringe a little bit.
Yeah,
because
every time.
I had a professor, Dr. Milholland, told me one time, he's like, "There's always a choice. If you had a choice to do it, then you had a choice to not do it." And I was like, wow. Yeah, well, now there's consequences both ways.
Yeah.
But that was just a powerful thing for me, because we often get stuck in that focused point where I couldn't make any other choice than this. And the truth is, I could have chosen not to do it. And that is a choice as well. There's always another choice.
Well, we throw that around easily all the time. Teens were some of the worst. Whenever I would work with teenagers, they would say that all the time. It says, "Well, Mom and Dad said I have to do this or else I don't get my cell phone, so I don't have a choice." Bull crap. Yes, you do. "No, mm-hmm. I don't, or else I don't get my phone back." See, that's it. What you're telling me really is you don't like the consequences.
Right.
Of not doing that. But parents would do it too. They would sit there and say, "Well, Trey, they act up and they throw a fit in the middle of..."
"What choice do I have?"
"Yeah, they throw a fit in the middle of the store and they won't get up as I'm walking around the corner, so I had to go pick them up and put them in the basket. What choice do I have?" Well, your choice could have been that you throw a rock at them. Or your choice could have been that you walk off and don't ever pick them up ever again and never see them again, right? However, what you're saying is, and see, I often use this as a good opportunity to make it very positive. What you're telling me is you're a better parent than somebody who would walk away from their kid forever or throw a rock at their face. And we love that about you, right? Always have choices. But the thing could be, just like you said, we may just not like the consequence.
Right. And honestly, when you point out to somebody they have a choice, that's a very empowering thing, because oftentimes we feel hopeless because we feel like we're being controlled or we're being manipulated to make a certain choice. And when we point out that, we're really only limited by our own creativity. There's a lot of different ways we can respond. And helping once we point out that there are other choices, and you may not like the consequences of it, but there is another choice. And one of the difficulties that I run into sometimes is that once the realization comes about that there's a choice in a situation, a lot of times people start second guessing themselves and they'll say, "Did I make the right choice? What do you think? Was that a good choice or a bad choice?" And now it's a value judgment.
Sure.
Right? If our kids are saying, "Did I do the right thing? Was that the wrong thing to do?" And I hate to answer that directly, because it doesn't have to be good or bad. It was a choice, right?
Yeah.
Now, what happens next and how we respond to it, that can be a good or bad thing. But the choice itself, it was just a choice, right?
Yeah, you're bringing up a brilliant point here that I do want to hit on just a second before we move on.
Sure.
This concept of, because we've been working with that with Anna and Grant lately, because, is this the right choice? And I have to look at my kids and say, "I can't answer that for you." But we'll walk through a checklist. Number one, did you hurt somebody else when you did it? Well, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you destroy somebody else's property? No. Then the answer is, it's a good choice. Is it going to be the one that has the least amount of consequences? I don't know. However, we learn from bad experiences with our consequences. As long as we're not hurting other people or destroying other people's property or trying to take away somebody else's ability to choose what they want to do in their life, if you're not violating those three, this is Homestead Day Gibson talk here, but if you're not violating those three premises, it really doesn't matter. You're not hurting people, you're not destroying their stuff, and you're not trying to take somebody else's choice away to do something. Then everything from here is just learning. You may get into it. You may not like the choice that you made. Next time, you may make a different choice. But there is a beautiful thing in failure.
And I think that's a fantastic thing to help our kids understand is
yes.
that choices don't have to be good or bad.
That's right.
What we're talking about and what you just did there by giving them kind of a framework for how do I evaluate my choice, that is where we insert not just do I need to make a choice, but how do I make a wise choice?
That's right.
And that's where asking those questions and like you said, you had those criteria. You know, does it reduce somebody else's ability to make a choice? Does it violate somebody else's person or does it destroy something, right? Those are some parameters. And some other things that you can throw in there, once again, to take it away from a value judgment of whether it was a good or bad, right or wrong, is, well, was it helpful? I mean, what did you want to happen? Okay, well, did this get you closer to what you wanted to happen, right?
Was it
safe? Was it a smart choice, right? So, rather than was it a good or bad choice, well, what happened afterwards? Okay, is that what you wanted to happen? Okay, so in this case, it may not have been the best decision. Or, well, that's what you wanted to happen, and it happened. Okay, well, there you go. It worked.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Was it helpful? Did it help you move something forward, right? So being able to work through some of those and talk about the factors that go into what makes a helpful or healthy decision allows them to identify and compare the different consequences and outcomes of the available choices that they do have, right? Helping them to identify their goals. When we go into the schools with the prevention program that I work in now, we go into the schools and one of the skills that we teach is goal setting. And I find it remarkable that no matter what grade level we're at, I mean, we're in from first grade all the way to 12th grade. No matter what grade level we're at, we have goal setting, a structure for teaching kids goal setting. And I'm always amazed that in the older grades, that's not been included that we teach kids how to do at the younger ages. Because sometimes we're in high school and we're going through this goal setting model. You know, is it smart? You know, is it helpful? You know, and they don't have a way to evaluate their decisions, and they don't have a goal they're working toward. You know, is it personable? Is it achievable? Is it, you know, how do you set goals? That's a skill that. If the research has identified, if kids have the ability to set a goal and make decisions, man, that is so empowering. And they do better in every area of their life when they have those two basic skills.
You know, that's so. I'm always the most alive whenever I have something I'm focused on. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's rebuilding Family Podcast Network or if I'm building a new AR, whatever. If there's something that I am doing that I have a goal that I'm moving towards, I always do better when I have that next anchor point, and kids are no different.
Well, I think it gives us direction.
Absolutely.
And without having direction, we can make decisions, but for what reason, right? Yeah.
Slightly aimlessly. We're just making random decisions.
All right. So let's kind of run through a scenario here, Trey. Let's say our kid is trying to decide whether they want to go hang out with their friends or whether they want to spend time working on, like working out like their coach told them to, right? Okay. Well, hang out with your friends is important, right? Well, would it be the right thing to do because coach said that I had to practice? Well, this is your choice. If coach told you to practice, then you have a choice whether to do that or not to do that. But what do you want to be able to do? Well, I want to be a starter on the varsity team. All right. Well, if that goal is important to you, what decision would be most helpful right now? I guess I should practice. All right. Well, great. And it's not a good or bad decision. And if they decide to hang out with their friends, all right. Well, that's the decision. Later, when coach is complaining that you're you're not as conditioned or toned as everyone else, well, that's going to be something. Will there be a consequence to the choice that you're making right now? Right. So being able to help them be reminded of goals or set their goals gives them clarity on what their choices ought to be.
You said something I think is real valuable and very important to all of what we're talking about here. But you made the comment, we're helping them figure out what's important. If that's important to them, you said. And I think that's a huge piece of what choices need to be about with our kids as well, is that often we have all these things for our kids that we think are important. And some of those things really are. But we often want our kids wind up writing our interest in certain things instead of developing their own choice to find those things valuable, whether it's saying yes sir and yes ma'am, or putting the lid down after your boys go potty, or whatever else that it is, we have these things that we believe are important. And a big piece of with working with our kids, and I love the example that you used with playing a sport, is that we've got to help them make that choice. Also, what's important to them? if they sit there and they see that just over and over and over, they really find themselves wanting to hang out more with their friends than they care about the values and the benefits of playing ball, well, there's something that we need to be talking to them about. You know, I noticed every time we have this conversation a lot that you always kind of wish you could go hang out with your friends. A question we might need to ask ourselves, do we want to play basketball next year? Well, yes, I do, because I do love this. Or, no, I don't, because I really wish I was playing. But helping them understand those things about themselves and make the big, that's kind of a macroscopic choice, but helping them look at those things and ask themselves, do we want to do that? I mean, we can keep going. I'll wrap this up here on this, but you can go another step further. What happens if your kid says, no, I really think I want to quit basketball? Okay, well, let's talk about what the consequences of that choice would be. Mm-hmm. How are people going to see you? Are they going to see you as reliable, right? Then we can walk them through what are the consequences they could have of that. But fundamentally, we have to let our kids have that choice.
Well, and a good thing to keep in mind here is that our kids are making choices based on, like we said, what's important to them, but it's not necessarily the wise decision for them. And so sometimes we need to revert back to the, okay, well, I hear you say that you want to not play basketball anymore, but you know, at the beginning of the semester you said that you wanted to play and you made a commitment to the team. So I'm okay with you deciding that you want to play. But you made a commitment for this season, and for this season, we need to stay the course, and we need to make sure that the people who are depending on us to do our part for the team, especially if it's a team sport, that we're not letting them down. So I'll respect your decision, but we also need to respect the decision that you made previously, you know? And that's the discussion we've had with our kids too, you know, that they want to start something and they try and then they decide they don't like it anymore. Well, you don't have to do it forever, but if you committed to do something for a time, we're going to finish it out. And sometimes it's a money investment. You know, we paid for them to do a certain thing. Okay, well, as long as it's not hurting you, well, let's finish it out. You know, it may just be that initial uncomfortableness because it's new, and you may get past it, and you may decide that you like it. So, you know, just because they're making that decision doesn't mean that we can't explore it with them and help them understand. And I like the example of hanging out with your friends versus playing ball, because it may be that the immediate decision they're making right now is like, well, you know, next season, what are your friends going to be doing? Oh, they're going to be on the team. So if you want to spend time with your friends later, you know, they're going to be doing team stuff. And if you decide, hey, I'm not going to play on the team, then maybe you're actually in the future limiting yourself about spending time with your friends. So teens don't think more than, I don't know, a week or two ahead. They live in the here and now as a developmental consequence of what's going on in their brain. They just aren't thinking forward that long. And so part of our job as parents is to make sure that they're, like Trey, you were talking about, thinking in a broader context, because that may be something that they're not focused on.
You know, you said something that at first I was thinking, ooh, we have a point of disagreement here, because you made the comment, you said what's important to them may not necessarily be the best thing for them to make their decision upon. And my first thought was, yeah, I disagree. But you actually went on to clarify what my thought process was. In some cases, it may not be important to them, and then you went on to say, but it's also important for us to help us connect why this decision or why sticking with something like we talked about earlier is important, because, and then we expand out what are some of the further consequences. And I do agree with you on that. And I only start that off with, it is very important for us to go down things that our kids find important, but sometimes they need to understand why. Why is it important that we put all, you know, we clean the food up before we go to bed at night, right? They may not want to do that. They may not think that's important at all. But if they had cockroaches skittering through their beds, it gets a lot more important, right?
Suddenly, yeah. Amazingly important, right? So we talked about listening to our kids and then talking with them about the choices that are available and helping to point out that there are choices. And then we talked about the possible consequences, making those connections, you know, what's important, what's going to happen down the road, and be able to explain to them without falling into that lecturing mode what different consequences may be. But finally, we've got to be able to allow our kids to make those decisions, as long as it's not going to cause them physical harm or put them in danger, make those decisions and help them. Okay, now that you made the decision, you set that goal, how are you going to achieve it, right? What's your plan, right? And it may be that their plan's a little bit different from what you would do. But I have been amazed, Trey, that when I give my kids the opportunity and we talk through it, man, let me give you an example. And Ethan was talking to me about this earlier when he was helping us out with the little boom noise at the beginning of our intro. He was like, Dad, tell him about my choice. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know, that choice that I made about eating healthy. And I'm thinking, Ethan, I have seen you eat. You know, tonight he had like four bowls of chicken and dumplings. I'm like, he's going through a growth spurt, but that's not healthy eating. You know? We talked about things that are important to him. I have had a difficulty in the past of understanding Ethan's choices about some stuff. And it's felt sometimes like he's been kind of wishy-washy about wanting to do karate and then wanting to do soccer and wanting to do different things. And he hasn't always had the stick-to-itiveness with some things. And so it's been a little bit frustrating on a parental side of things. But he made a decision after talking to his doctor one time. We went up to Oklahoma for one of our quarterly checkups for his diabetes. And I don't know why it stuck with him, but it did. His doctor said that one of the worst things he could do would be to drink sodas, because sodas are basically, you know, sugar factories. And that a lot of diabetics, the way that they treat their diabetes nowadays is that they have a pump or they have access to fast-acting insulin. And so they can have a Coke, even though it's, you know, a lot of sugar and high fructose corn syrup and all that other stuff. As long as they give themselves insulin for it, that they can still have regular, you know, they shouldn't do it all the time, but she said it would really be better if he never did it, right? And this was like 3 or 4 years ago. Ethan took that and ran with it, and he said, wow, I think I'm going to limit myself to one soda a month. Okay? Now, we're talking a 6 or 7 year old kid here who doesn't get as much sugar as other kids do just because he's diabetic. To further deny himself, you know, not just diet sodas, no sodas.
Yeah. Wow, man, that's impressive.
And because it was important to him, he has stuck with that decision, because it was, and his plan is when we go out to eat, he, you know, everyone else is ordering, Mary Hannah's diabetic too, and she orders Diet Coke or Diet Dr. Pepper or something like that. And Ethan has just decided he'll tell the waiter, he says, I would like unsweet tea. And he's got a plan.
I love it.
He even tells them, he says, listen, he'll call the waiter over, and as part of his little routine, he'll tell them, I'm going to put sweetener in my tea, you know, Splenda or NutraSweet or something. I'm going to put a sweetener in there, and I don't want you to refill it, because, you know, they're always coming back and refilling your drinks. He said, I don't want you to refill it till it's completely gone, so I don't have to remix it. I mean, he's got it down to...
Yeah, wow, man. She...
And he does it at home. He does it at restaurants. He will drink water... unsweetened tea or something with artificial flavoring in it. And occasionally he'll remember, oh, hey, I haven't had a soda this month. But the self-control that goes into remembering to do that.
And, yeah, that's fantastic.
Choice, because it's important to him and because he worked a plan, he's been able to do this. Like I said, we're going on like 4 years. And I'm like, okay, Ethan, if you can do this, why can't you remember to get a towel before you shower? You know? But that's really important. And if we ask our kids, do you have a plan, and then help remind them and help them to follow through the plan, and then later process with them, you know, how did that work out? What did you learn from that decision? That's what you were saying earlier. Even if it was a decision that ended up having negative consequences or something that was painful or not fun, did you learn something from it? Right? That's great. If you learn something from it, next time you'll make a different decision. And we can praise them not only for learning from poor decisions, but we can praise them when they make good decisions that we can really get on board with.
You know, I have a dirt bike, and it's called a dual purpose, but we can ride it. It's a dirt bike that you can ride to work. And, I have a carport that I park it under. Well, Anna has this little electric, battery powered, scooter. It looks a lot like the Vespa scooters that are real popular in Europe. And, anyway, she loves to ride. Ever since Daddy started riding dirt bikes, she loves to ride this thing too. And she rides it all over the place. And so she got to where she was parking it inside the carport, right smack dab in the middle where Daddy parks his scooter, his motorcycle. So, which isn't a problem. I don't care. I think it's cute as can be that she loves to park her scooter next to my motorcycle. It warms my heart. But there reaches a point that it's a very tall motorcycle, and I have one of the shortest inseams in the world. And so if I don't park in just the right spot with it, I'm so tippy toes that when I try to go lean it over to the side to put it on its kickstand, if I'm not careful, I can tump it over. And so Anna's got this habit where she would park right in the middle. And so I had to park off to the side where it tapers off. And so I'm sitting there with my little, you know, my little midget legs, you know, trying to stretch out to touch this thing so I don't fall over on this motorcycle. And so the other, you know, and I was getting so frustrated with Anna, and I was just starting to get more and more upset with her. And each time I was just getting harsher in how I was talking to her. And my wife actually brought it up. She goes, Trey, I don't think she understands why this is a problem. And the concept that went down this was that I wasn't making it important to her. So there was no reason to choose the right thing because all that was happening was she was barking and then daddy just gets to being a turd. Well, that doesn't make her want to do what daddy's wanting anymore whenever I'm being more of a butt. And so finally one day I just sat down and said, do you understand why I do this? And she was like, well, not really. And immediately it was just a smack in the face. I was like, you jerk, what, Trey? Come on, Trey. Here you are being a jerk and she doesn't even understand yet. So I walked her through why it was and I explained to her. And she goes, oh, I had that happen to me the other day when I went into a big giant tire track. She's talking about a rut in a mud rut. And she goes, I did it and I couldn't reach the ground and I fell over and it was scary. I said, ah, that's exactly right. You should. The very next day, I roll up on that dirt bike, right? And guess what? Man, I've got a good 3 feet where she parked that dirt bike. Wow. I mean, her little scooter, right? But instantly, I put it in a position where I was able to make it important to her. She could connect it with her own experiences. And then what happens to her choice? Boom, there it was.
That's awesome. And these are great examples. Trey, one of the things that I love about this show is that we're able to kind of make things connect.
Show you guys how we've messed up in so many ways is what you're really saying.
That's right. You know, when we derp it up a little bit, we're willing to admit it. But we learn from our mistakes too, right? So to wrap things up with this article from the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, they talk about in addition to – I just kind of to run through here. In addition to listening to our kids to understand, to talking them – with them about choices, to helping them to identify possible consequences and then make that plan and carry it out and follow up with them. They said that that all along the way, all of those things are made easier if our kids feel like we're respecting them. If we are behaving in such a way that we're honoring their decisions, even if we don't agree with them, allowing them to voice their personal opinions, involving them in decisions that affect the entire family, to listen to their opinions, to show faith in their ability to reach good conclusions and make good decisions, and you know, even when they make mistakes, we can still be supportive, right? My suspicion is that if we can incorporate some of these tips that they're giving us today, and we can do it with respect to our teens, not only are we going to eliminate a lot of the conflict in our family, but we're also going to lay the groundwork for our kids being able to build their own self-esteem because they'll start to make good choices, and then they'll continue feeling that they are able to trust their own decisions and have good judgment about it. And when that happens, if you can set that at that bar at a young age, as they move into teenage years, I guarantee it's going to make your parenting of teenagers a whole lot easier so that you don't have to worry and lose sleep at night wondering what your kids are doing out there.
Yeah.
So that's what we got. You know, it's important to help our kids make choices rather than telling them what to do. And when we, as parents, can do that for our kids, then they will choose wisely. All right. So we spent a good amount of time on this podcast talking about how it's a good idea as parents for us to help our kids make healthy choices and to encourage them and to listen to them and talk to them. But on the other side of this equation is choice overload. And I've seen it happen, especially with younger kids, that when they're given too many choices and they're not developmentally ready for it, it can be something that kind of shuts them down. It's kind of like when you go to Walmart and you just need one type of toilet paper, but there's like 50 and it's like, I don't need this many choices. You know, how do I make a wise choice when they all look pretty much the same? Right. And you see that especially with younger kids, you know, we focused on talking to our teens and adolescents and everything, but what about if we started at a younger age? Well, I mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast, just in passing, but let's take a closer look at this crosswalk.com article, written by John Upchurch, one of the senior editors. He calls it Why I Give My Children Fewer or No Choices, right? And what he says is that he fell into the category of, well, I thought I'd try to give my kid choices, but he comes up and he says, hey, can you read me a book? And he's, mommy, read me a book. Okay, so you reach for one, but he doesn't want that book. And you pick another one. He doesn't want that book. But he still wants you to read, so you point to another one. And he doesn't want that book. It's like, okay.
I get it.
How can you make the choice, right? Or if it's about food time. You know, sometimes I've seen parents kind of give their kid too many choices at dinner so that, okay, here's what we fixed. And the kid doesn't want it. Okay, well, I'll fix you something else. So what else do you want? Well, I don't want that. Well, I don't want that. And next thing you know, you're catering to your kid, and they're starting to feel this sense of entitlement. And it's not really about making choices. It's about getting what they want.
That's right. Yep, I agree.
So younger kids don't have wisdom yet to make good choices. And so sometimes we need to, like we said, give them structured choices, right? Because wisdom is passed on over time and children aren't born with it, we have to give them, help them develop that capacity to make good choice. And that's what this article talks about. So go back to the kids picking out a book, right? Instead of you get to pick the book, maybe you get to pick the activity. Do you want to read a book or do you want to watch a show before you go to sleep? Do you want to sit in my lap or do you want to sit on the floor? But we're going to read a book and I'm going to pick it, right? When it comes to dinner time, and let me tell you, we've had a number of arguments over food stuff, and trying to find how that works in the Emery family. But, sometimes your choices are take it and leave it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've even heard parents use the you get what you get and you don't throw a fit, right? In other words, if you want to have some say-so in dinner, well, why don't you help me pick out what we're making in the first place, right? There's a lot of different ways to get at it so that it doesn't come down to what we were talking about earlier, that battle when it comes to food time, right? If I'm making food that my kid doesn't like to eat, well, I'm setting myself up for that struggle. But if we say, hey, you know, we need to have some vegetables tonight, we've got broccoli, we've got green beans, we've got potatoes. What do you want? Okay, well, then they get a choice of something that's healthy, and then they can maybe help you fix it or prepare it, so they've got some investment in it. I've always found that my kids enjoy helping out getting stuff ready for dinner, and then there's some pride so that when it's time to eat, they're like, I made this.
Yeah.
And even if it turns out not so good, they'll choke it down because they made it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we have this issue with Netflix, and all my bigger kids are fine with it, but when Charlotte, you know, she's two, whenever she first started getting into Netflix, I just started saying, what do you want to watch, babe? And I would just sit there and I would go through all the different ones. This one? No. This one? No. This one? No. And I finally realized, well, this is too much. This is just too much for it. It's overwhelming. There's too many options. And so what we did was I started just right before we would crank up Netflix, I would say, do you want to watch this? Do you want to watch The Croods? Or do you want to watch My Little Pony? Right? We would give them those options and she would pick right then. And then we would go to it. And we saved so much stressors by giving just a few options instead of giving too many. Now, she's old enough now. She's almost three, and so she's old enough now that she can go through the more vast selection and pick out something just fine. But it's amazing how it seems contradictory, but when you remove too much of the stimuli, it's amazing how it makes it easier for them to process without getting overwhelmed or frustrated, et cetera, whatever.
The author of this article gives some personal examples, kind of like we do on the show, where giving fewer choices to his kids was miraculous in turning their attitudes around. He said, my wife stepped in at some point and told me to quit giving too many choices to our 2-year-old, right? And so it became, no longer did my daughter get to pick breakfast. She just got to choose whether or not she wanted to eat right now. You know, no longer did she get to select her outfit. She just got to choose whether she wanted to help putting it on, right? And he said the strangest thing happened when she realized that we wouldn't change our meal plan for the day, despite how she protested. She didn't starve. She ate.
The
food just vanished. Same thing with her clothes. And it may have had a little bit more frustration, but gradually the arguing and complaining lessened. He does point out it never stops completely, right? Nobody ever stops complaining completely. But they just accepted not having as many choices. And it was a relief because at a young age, man, it's terrifying to have to rely on your own wisdom when you haven't developed that wisdom yet, right? That's why kids need structure and they need boundaries. And as parents, we can help them not to get overwhelmed with choices when we give them structured choices. And I think that's the point of this article right now. It doesn't mean that they don't get choices at all. They just settle into a pattern of accepting what's given. And there are exceptions of when they get more voice or more say-so, when they get a little bit older and they have more capacity for making decisions and for expressing themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. That's good.
So, you know, when it comes down to it, Trey, our listeners have a choice.
Yes, they
do. They can listen to the Real Family Guys podcast or the Family Podcast Network, or they could choose not to. But we want them to make wise decisions. And so week by week, month by month, we will continue scouring the webs and finding great things to share with you guys, and hopefully bringing some topics that you guys share with us as well. But we love what we do, and we hope that you do choose wisely and make the choice to come back and listen to us again when we once again bring education and experience together in a kaboom sort of way in order to produce results that make us the parents that we want to be and give our kids the parents they deserve.
Hey, if nothing else, we'll see you guys next week.